I'm pulling out my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay, so today's topic is based on a request from my blog. Today is about the history of returns. So I'm going to talk about all the different times we went back to a world and explain why. Why did we go back? And sort of talk through the reasoning of why we went back to different places. Okay, so to start with, magic for the first, 10 plus years, 10 to 15 years, mostly stayed in the same place. It was on Dominaria. We moved around pieces of Dominaria. We were Terra Sierra, we're in Jamora, we're in Otaria. Like, we'd go to different places, different continents. But we didn't, in the early days, we didn't do a lot of plane swapping. There's a few things. Arabian Nights was Rabaya, Homelands was Ogrotha, Tempest Block was on Wrath, which Wrath later got overlaid with Dominaria. We also went to Mercadia. But really, the story picks up. There's a period of time when we start deciding to just go to other worlds and make that a regular thing, where every year we're going to, at the time there were blocks. Every block we'd be going to a different world. So I'm going to pick up past the point where we started going to different worlds. I think Meriden is kind of the start of that, because before that, Onslaught and Odyssey and Onslaught were still on Dominaria. But then Meriden, it's a brand new plane, and Champs of Kamigawa and stuff. So we're starting to go to new plane. So our first return, I'm going to say Time Spiral is our first return, because we went back to Dominaria. And we at least been away. We were at Mirrodin. We were at Champions of Kamigawa. We were in Ravnica. Okay, we spent at least there was a gap. Before that, if there was a set off of Dominaria, it was not very long. But this was, okay, 4 years. So Time Spiral came about because we wanted to revamp Magic, the story of Magic. One of the things we were excited to do was we wanted to bring Planeswalkers to the game. But Planeswalkers were like uber powerful gods at the time. So we're like, okay, let's kind of redo the story, revamp it, and like power down what Planeswalkers are. You know, they still move from place to place, which is the important part. And they are, more powerful than the average person, and they have magical abilities and such. But not quite like I'm a god, a little lower down than that. And so Time Spiral, we went back to Dominaria. It was the closest thing we've done to a post-apocalyptic set. And the idea really was that we wanted to go back. I was really interested in messing with time as a theme. I had a bunch of mechanics. We had Suspend. We were trying to introduce Flash. We had Split Second. We had a bunch of different things that sort of were time related. And then I came up with this idea of branching of like the block plan being past, present, and future, although alternate present. Going back to sort of the center of it all, to have this giant temporal disaster, felt like the right place to do. I will say, as returns go, we definitely in the first set were playing into the past. So there was a lot of drawing and characters you recognize. And so we definitely were playing around the fact that we were on Dominaria, and there could be a lot of things that were from the past on Dominaria. The fact that Dominaria wasn't irrelevant, it mattered. That is our first return, as I'm labeling it. Our second return was Scars of Meriden. So, we were going back to Meriden. So what had happened was, during the Weatherlight Saga, the main villains were the Phyrexians. And at the end of the Weatherlight Saga, Urza purges the multiverse of the Phyrexians. But Brady Dommermuth, who was the head of the creative director at the time, and myself, were huge fans of the Phyrexians. We felt like you can't completely get rid of the Phyrexians. So we came up with actually this pretty long story idea. We planted seeds in original Meriden. In fact, if you read the novel, like the villain of it, like in the, page 2, like finds this oil and he sort of rubs it in and it goes into his, and then we don't even talk about it anymore. But that was the Phyrexian oil. And it turns out that Karn, when he made Meriden, unwillingly brought some Phyrexian oil to the place, and it got infected. So the original plan for the return was, it wasn't even going to be an obvious return. The original plan was, it's just going to be new Phyrexia, And, oh, the Phyrexians are back. And at, only at the end of the block would you learn that actually this was Mirrodin, that Mirrodin had fallen. And we later learned that, you know, we were missing a fun story, the fall of Mirrodin. Like, if we really wanted to establish the Phyrexians as a bad guy, Mirrodin had been a pretty potent place. It was thought of as being a very powerful block because we made a lot of broken cards in it. So the idea that the Phyrexians came and defeat the Mirrodin that are no slouches really helped put them on the map. And we ended up doing this thing where we had, we come back to Mirrodin, the Phyrexians are there, we have a Phyrexian watermark that's on like 10% of the cards. So we learned for the first time, oh, the Phyrexians have been here and they're slowly growing. And the middle set, Mirrodin Besieged, was a war in which it was 50-50. And at the pre-release, you chose whether you wanted to fight for the Mirrodins or the Phyrexians. And then you didn't know how it would end. We announced two different sets. The final set would either be Mirrodin Pure, meaning Mirrodin won, or New Phyrexia, meaning Phyrexia won. And then obviously Phyrexia won and became New Phyrexia. We saw the fall of Mirrodin and established the Phyrexians as a big threat that obviously we will come back to. Next, Return to Ravnica. So when I become head designer, the very first block I led, or the first block under my reign, I also happened to lead the first set, was Ravnica. And Ravnica was a really radical take. One of the big things I was doing when I was doing block planning was I wanted our blocks a little more planned out. We had a bad habit of doing something and just throw forwards and then just do more. And so Ravnica was saying, no, it's planned. It's 4-3-3. We're doing these four factions and these three factions and these three things. Like, you could sort of see what was coming, and clearly each thing had a place, and there was no sort of petering out because everything had, you know, every set was doing something that was expected and wanted. Anyway, Ravnica was super, super popular. In fact, Magic was in a downward trend at the time, I don't know if down is the right word, but we were trending, we were slowing down our growth. Maybe that's the correct way to say it. Our growth was radically slowing down. Maybe downward trend's a little unfair. Our growth was slowing significantly. We were plateauing. And the one bump in that plateauing was Ravnica. So we realized that we had captured lightning in a bottle. There's something really cool about it. And so we planned to go back to Ravnica. In fact, there's a video we used to show. We announced it somewhere out east, like PAX East or something. We announced that we were going back to Ravnica. And the audience just, like, erupts. They're screaming. They're so excited. There's two guys hug. Like, it's just... just the amount of, like, just pure excitement they were going back to Ravnica. Now, Time Spiral had a time theme. It wasn't really mirroring any mechanical elements of Dominaria. Scars of Mirrodin, we touched a little bit on elements of Mirrodin, but really was more about being the Phyrexian invasion, capturing the Phyrexians. Return to Ravnica is the first return where we're like, do it again. The one big change we did in Return to Ravnica, instead of being 4-3-3, so a large set was four factions, the two small sets were 3-3, we did two large sets and one medium-sized set. So the two large sets each were 5-5, and they drafted by themselves, so they drafted much better. The original Ravnica was very popular, but the draft format was wonky, drafting 4-3-3. When you drafted the first set, you didn't end up drafting two-color factions. You ended up drafting three-color factions. And so we like the idea that in Ravnica, the two-color guild world, you're inclined to draft two colors. So, and then we did Dragon's Maze was the end where we did all 10. So it was like 5-5 and then a repeat of all 10. Next, Battle for Zendikar. So we had left Zendikar on a big cliffhanger. We had come to Zendikar, we saw all about it, and then we'd wanted to... The third set of Zendikar was a block that had all new mechanics. And to sort of justify having all new mechanics but not leaving the world, the creative team came up with this very giant event, which by the name might tell you. It was Rise of the Eldrazi. So the Eldrazi were captured and trapped inside Zendikar many years earlier. And they escape thanks to some unwitting planeswalkers. And anyway, the set was all about the Eldrazi. So it really had a different feel from the original Zendikar. The Eldrazi were giant and colorless and alien and, you know. So when we went back, it's like, okay, we kind of left this giant cliffhanger. I guess we should resolve the cliffhanger. So Battle for Zendikar was not really at all what Zendikar was. I mean, there were some nods to it. Landfall was in the set. There was some land theming and stuff. Allies were in the set. But mostly it was this new two-sided conflict of the denizens of Zendikar versus the Zendikari versus the Eldrazi. And while the Zendikar side had elements of original Zendikar, so there was some stuff. It wasn't, we were back in Zendikar, but the Eldrazi side was all new things and completely different. So I think one of the things that was going on at the time was we had done Ravnica exactly the same, but we had this philosophy like, well, if we're going back, maybe we should change things up a bit. And so purposely Battle for Zendikar was a very different set than original Zendikar. Followed by Shadows over Innistrad. So Shadows of Innistrad, same philosophy. We're going back to Innistrad, but we decided instead of Gothic horror, what if we did cosmic horror? So the idea was, the other thing that had changed, we're now in the era of two-set blocks. So Time Spiral with three-set blocks, Scars of Mirrodin, Return of Ravnica, all three-set blocks. Battle for Zendikar and Shadows of Innistrad, two-set blocks. And so the idea is the first set is this mystery set where we're trying to figure out sort of what's going on. Jake shows up and starts wearing a trench coat and like, ooh, what's the mystery? What's the mystery of Innistrad? Well, it turns out that one of the Eldrazi from the previous block, Emrakul, the Gatewatch had been formed. They stopped to the Eldrazi, but where's the third Eldrazi? He had been pulled to Innistrad by Nahiri, who was mad at Sorin for things that had to do with the Zendikar and Eldrazi. And the fact that Eldrazi escaped on Zendikar, she wasn't happy about it. But anyway, Emrakul's now in Innistrad and is causing all sorts of like mutations, and it really captured kind of the cosmic horror feel we wanted. But once again, while there's a little bit of tie-over, like the monsters are there, I mean, there's monster type, but there's a little bit of pull-over from Innistrad, but Shadows of Innistrad and Battle for Zendikar both were trying to be a return that had a different feel to it. And mechanically, really was doing some different things. Okay, then we get to Dominaria. So Dominaria was the first of us starting to do single sets. Originally, it was going to be Dominaria and a small set. It was going to be part of our... but this was the first one we sort of broke from that. Said, okay, no, just one set. One of the challenges of Dominaria was... We had been, like, there's so many past sets of Dominaria that we weren't quite sure, well, what do we, you know, on some levels, Dominaria had been so many different kind of planes. Like, each continent had been so radically different from other continents. So the thing we ended up doing is we said, well, what if the idea of Dominaria is all but its history? It's a world that has suffered through so much, but they've thrived through the history. And we really... We brought Dominaria back. It flourished again. It wasn't quite the post-apocalyptic world, the Time Spiral. But again, we were sort of, like, we played up the history theme, but that was, you know, historic and doing things that were sort of kind of new to the set. The set had a legendary creature in every pack and stuff like that. Okay, then we get to Guilds of Ravnica. That's our third trip to Ravnica. Again, we really don't change our... I mean... Because we're doing individual sets, there's two sets of five factions, guilds each, back-to-back. Interesting, we started doing our one-ofs, and right away we did a two-of, to kind of demonstrate we could do that. But anyway, so Guilds of Ravnica, once again, as with Return to Ravnica, we changed what the guild mechanics were. We do slightly different things. Like, each trip to, you know... Like, Return to Ravnica, we had never done charms. We did guild charms. Like, we found ways to lean into the theme that there's some novel stuff. But Return to Ravnica and Guilds of Ravnica were not reinventing anything. Oh, you like Ravnica? You like guilds? You like faction play? Well, that's what we're delivering on. You know, you want to go to your pre-release and choose your faction? Well, we're delivering that. And I think the idea that we realized was that maybe... The idea of Returns being more of an embrace of the world you knew when you were there the first time. Like, it's kind of, this is ever-going thing on Returns of, like, how much are you supposed to be the same and how much are you supposed to be different? And I think what we've sort of come to the conclusion of is if people really liked the original world, you want to lean toward more of the same. If it's a world where there was some conflict, or when I say conflict, I don't mean within the world. I mean, the player base had some issues or was polarizing. that's when maybe, okay, we can redo the world some. And so there will come up some worlds that we really redid. Next, Theros Beyond Death. I guess this is the last of us trying something a smidgen different, that era. We went back to Theros. The idea was the focus was on the underworld. Elsbeth, one of our planeswalkers, she had died, but because she died on Theros, she went to the underworld of Theros. And she was a big part of our Phyrexian arc that was coming up. So we needed to free her. So we knew eventually we were going to go back. It was a long throw forward. When she died in Theros, like, there's a little tag telling you, now she's in the underworld. So we had to go back. She actually escapes from the underworld. And once again, the set sort of was reminiscent of Theros to a certain extent. Theros had been one of the really big first worlds based on enchantments. We went back to that, so definitely had an enchantment feel. But we didn't, we brought back a couple mechanics, but it was definitely us exploring. It was like half what you knew and half something new, definitely in that era. Okay, then is Zendikar Rising. So Zendikar Rising is our third trip to Zendikar, and we decided to kind of go back to the roots. So Zendikar Rising was us really trying to recapture what people liked about original Zendikar. We leaned a lot more into sort of the adventure world, the party mechanic, which was new, which is leaning into that general flavor. Obviously, Landfall was back. And so Zendikar Rising was a lot more like original Zendikar than the Battle for Zendikar had been. Next, Innistrad Midnight Hunt. Okay, so this is our third return to Innistrad. We ended up doing two sets, Innistrad Midnight Hunt and Crimson Vow, which at the time, we weren't doing a lot of sets back-to-back in the same world. We had kind of done that because we had added a set to the schedule and decided that just building a whole new world, we didn't quite have time for that. We ended up sort of leaning into different themes. Midnight Hunt was more about werewolves, and Crimson Vow was a little bit more about vampires. One was a midnight festival, one was a wedding, the different events. And I think Innistrad, Midnight Hunt, and Crimson Vow was a lot like Zendikar Rising. Let's recapture what made original Innistrad fun. It was like we're back to gothic horror and not cosmic horror. And so we really kind of leaned into the roots of that. Next, Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty. So I just mentioned earlier, if sets were successful, we were leaning into what they did successful. Kamigawa was pretty famous in that the original Kamigawa block did not do well. In fact, it did very bad. It sold poorly. It, at the time, for many years, was the lowest ranked world based on our market research. We considered it a failure of a world. But we had this idea of doing a world inspired by Japanese pop culture. Obviously, Kamigawa was more inspired by Japanese mythology. But a lot of people on my blog had really talked about how they wanted to go back to wanted to go back to Kamigawa. And so while we were working on it, we wove into the set this theme of old versus new, of modernity versus tradition, allowing to make a place where we could bring back old Kamigawa in a place that fit. So kind of the nature of when we want to reinvent a world, we often do this half and half thing. Half the set is what you know of it, but half is brand new thing. And often there's a conflict between what's the old thing and what's the new thing. So that's what we did there. The set was super, super successful. So it really definitely invigorated us with going back to worlds that might not have necessarily been as popular the first time out. A lot of our revisits had been, people love Zendikar, we'll go back. People love Ravnica, we'll go back. People love Innistrad, we'll go back. This is us really being a little bit risky, but it paid off. And it really sort of taught us that, hey, there is fans that really enjoy stuff in the past, even if our execution of it wasn't as good as it could have been. Next up, Dominaria United. So again, we try two back-to-back, Dominaria United leading into the Brothers' War. We were telling this giant story about the Phyrexians. The Phyrexians have a long history with Dominaria, so we decided we would go back to Dominaria. Again, this set, what we did is we picked a set from Dominaria, which was Invasion. And this set was kind of return to Invasion. Not completely from a flavor standpoint, but structurally. It really leaned into a lot of the themes from Invasion. There was a multicolor theme and Anyway, it Dominaria United with Jess Lee was like, let's tap into something that people know from Dominaria. But since Dominaria is so many different things, we'll pick one specific thing. We picked, I'm sorry, what did I say? Yeah, Invasion. Wait, we picked Invasion. Okay, next, Phyrexia, All Will Be One. So we were doing the Phyrexian story, the Phyrexian arc. We were leaning into this giant Phyrexian war. But we're like, okay, if you... The one thing about the Phyrexians, well, we love them as villains. They're a little... They have some body horror. They're a little... They lean into horror and stuff. And so they're not everybody's cup of tea. So what we decided was we wanted to do a Phyrexian story where most of the time the Phyrexians aren't that present, you know? So they showed up little over time. And, like, at first they're just one creature, then a couple creatures, and then in Dominaria United, they're like, okay, the Black has a bunch. But they're sort of isolated. But we said, you know what? If you're a fan of Phyrexia, we got to deliver on Phyrexia. So we said, you know what? We're going to do one Phyrexian set. If you love Phyrexians, this is wall-to-wall Phyrexia. So we went back to New Phyrexia, which was sort of a third return in the sense that New Phyrexia itself was a return to Mirrodin. So this was our first trip back to New Phyrexia, but our third trip back to the plane that was Mirrodin and such. And that set leaned very heavily into what the Scars of Mirrodin did, meaning it was very leaned into the flavor of Phyrexians. And so Scars of Mirrodin block had really introduced poison as a Phyrexian thing, proliferate as a Phyrexian thing. There's just a lot of themes that we sort of made Phyrexian. So we brought all those back. We introduced oil counters, and we changed up how poison worked. We had a new mechanic that interacted with poison, a little different than Infect, because Infect had been problematic. We continued, there was poison there. It was Phyrexia, you could poison your opponent. But we'd change things up a little bit. Okay, next up, I'll mention March of the Machine. Technically, it's a brand new story. It's the big capstone event that finishes the Phyrexian arc. The Phyrexians are invading every world. But because they're invading every world, we do a lot of, like, cameo visits. There's a lot of... for example, we did a cycle of battles, which were a new card type, and the battles named a lot of different worlds we either had been to or we had referenced, and so you gotta peek into a lot of worlds we've been before. It was a small peek, but for some of those worlds, you hadn't ever seen a card in them since we had been there, so it did allow us to give you some insight into some worlds that we hadn't been to a long time. Okay, next is Wilds of Eldraine. So original Eldraine had been... Actually, the very first set after the very first capstone event set, which was War of the Spark, was Eldraine. First time we'd visited Eldraine. So there's something, it's a palate cleanser. It's our sort of fairy tale Camelot world. It is pretty, it's very resonant, and we've discovered that fairy tales are pretty universally known in a way that some of our other tropes are not as well known. We went back. Another good example where we leaned into what the original set had done. There were adventures, there was food, but we added in a new layer. We kind of played up an enchantment theme that had not been strong in original Throne of Eldraine. I mean, it wasn't, one could argue, it wasn't there at all. But I mean, there are some enchantments, but we really added this enchantment element that was new. So there was a new component with rolls and stuff like that. So it was definitely us sort of going back to a world and trying to capture the thing people liked about it. It leaned a little bit harder into the fairy tale aspect than the original one had done. I think people really think of the first one as being fairy tale oriented, but actually it was a much smaller footprint than people remember. Okay, next, The Lost Caverns of Ixalan. So this is us trying something a little bit different. Originally, we were going to do an underground world, and we were going to do a brand new world. And as we were working on it, very late, actually Vision had been handed off already, Vision Design had been handed off, we audible decided, instead of going to a world we didn't know, let's make it the underground of a world we did know, and ended up making it Ixalan. Ixalan had this weird thing where people really loved the world, but the mechanics of the set had not been quite as beloved. So what we tried was what I called a backdrop set. It's a brand new mechanical theme, but it is using elements of a, like, we're returning to the world. Now, once we made an Ixalan, I would say that there was maybe 25% of the set was kind of throwback to Ixalan. So there's a little bit of that, lower than a normal return had been. Even a return like Dominaria, like Kamigawa, where we kind of 50-50'd it, Ixalan was not 50-50, it was lower than that. We really were doing underground world, but with a Phyrexian. I keep wanting to say other words. With an Ixalan sort of aspect to it. Then that was followed by Murders at Karlov Manor, which was us trying right away a backdrop set on Ravnica. Well, we had, once again, very similar thing. We wanted to do a murder mystery set. The plan was to make a brand new world that was the murder mystery set. But after making a brand new world, we realized that one of the things we needed was we really wanted familiarity. We wanted the person who died to be someone you know who they were, and we wanted the other characters around them to be things that were familiar. And we looked at a lot of different places. We did look at New Capenna. New Capenna was missing some things we needed. It didn't have enough really well-known characters. It didn't really have a legal system in a sense. It was crime world, but it was the idea for a detective novel is you have to believe like people want to solve the crimes. So anyway, we ended up putting it on Ravnica. It really, really isn't a Ravnica set. Like Lost Caverns, there's a little bit of a flavor, although I would argue not enough. I think Phyrexia did, not Phyrexia, I keep saying Phyrexia for things that I mean. Ixalan, Lost Caverns of Ixalan, did a much better job of bringing Ixalan-ness to it. Now, part of it that helps is the original Ixalan didn't have that much stuff that people really wanted back. I mean, we did dinosaurs and some pirates. I mean, the things that people wanted, we did do. But Ixalan, because it was less popular mechanically early on, we had less responsibility. Ravnica is a pretty popular world and mechanically. So the fact that we did Ravnica and didn't do factions and it wasn't much, not as much multicolor. And anyway, probably the lesson of Murders at Karlov Manor was it should have had a little bit more of the world we went back to. So I think we've learned on backdrop sets that it's okay to go to a new world and do a new thing. But when you do that, you want to make sure that you have enough of the world that there's some recognizability, that it has to have some mechanical identity. Not the whole thing. We can do backdrops. I think Lost Caverns Ixalan worked much better. Okay, then came Aetherdrift. So Aetherdrift was us trying something new. At the end of the March of the Machines, the Omen Pass opened. And so now the average person, not just planeswalkers, could move between worlds. And so the idea was, we decided to do what we call the travelogue. And so we said, okay, we're going to visit different worlds, three different worlds, and we ended up having a race set. But the thing that connected was, they were racing from world to world. So we went back to Avishkar. That's the new name of what originally was Kaladesh. And we went back to Amonkhet. So both of those were worlds that we had not revisited. I mean, I will count it as a revisit because there were cards there, and we got to go back and do some nods. I mean, there are definitely some smaller nods to both of those worlds, but much, much smaller. In fact, the racing took up, like, in some ways, the set was much, much more about the race. We could have done a set where, like, it's about revisiting the three worlds. That really is what we didn't end up doing. They were backdrops. They got overshadowed both by the race itself and by, we had 10 racing teams all from other places, so while there was a little bit of Avishkar, you know, there's some Gear Hulks and things, and there's a little bit of Amonkhet. It was a very light. I think we've learned that if we want to do multiple worlds, we have to bring up a little bit. Maybe we want to do two and not three. I don't know. Many lessons from Aetherdrift we're still absorbing. Okay, the last return, the one that just happened, is Tarkir Dragonstorm. So this is another one where this is like Kamigawa. We had not been there in a long time. Original Tarkir had been Kanza Tarkir. That was over 10 years ago. So it was, so we were coming back. The weird thing about Tarkir was, one of the things we did tend to do in the early days was, back in the days of the blocks, is we'd introduce something, and then we'd radically change the world during the course of the block because we tell environmental stories. And so the story of original Kanza Tarkir was, Sarkhan Vol goes back to Tarkir, and he loves his dragons, but they're all dead, they died, and he time travels and saves Ugin, which saves the dragons. So he returns back, and dragons are here, and now it's a whole new timeline, and dragons reign supreme, and the wedges, the clans that were wedges that you knew were gone. And so, and the weird thing about that was people really loved the wedge clans, and the dragons were okay. There were people that really liked the dragons, but was not as beloved as the wedge clans. So when we're going back, we said, okay, we really want to bring back the Wedge clans, but also we wanted to keep the dragons. So the idea, this is the timeline. So we had put some seeds into original concept here block of how the clans could come back. Because we recognize people might want the clans back. So we did at least seed that like we did with Mirrodin. But anyway, so Tarkir, when we made it, we said it was the best of both worlds. We wanted it to have wedges. We wanted it to have dragons. So in some ways, it was a 50-50 set, but 50 of it was one part of the old, and 50 was another part. So in a lot of ways, it was all Tarkir, but Tarkir had such different elements to it. Just the mere act of bringing them together really made the set feel brand new, because you're mixing different components. So anyway, that, in 30 minutes... is the history of all the basic returns. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this. It was fun looking back. And it's definitely over the years, our philosophy of how to do returns has shifted over time. I think we recognize that you want something new on a return, but people really want to fall in love. They want to see the thing they loved the first time, with the sole exception of if your set sort of didn't really hit the first time, you get to have a larger amount of new things, kind of like we did with Kamigawa. Kamigawa did not have a lot of mechanics we needed to save, so it was a much more mechanical relaunch. And we've actually, in design, we now differentiate that there actually are three different types of returns. There are traditional returns, and the idea there is deliver on what made it popular. Yeah, you can do new twists to it, you can add something, but you want it to be the world people fell in love with the first time. Then there's reinventions. This is more the Kamigawa, where not that you don't want to nod to the original world, but you want to really do something pretty new, that there's something about it that is reinventing things in some way. And the third category that we're still understanding is the idea of the backdrops, which is, it's not, the major focus is not the fact that it's this plane, that's secondary, but because it is this plane, we need enough acknowledgement of that plane. I do think Lost Count of Ixalan did do it pretty well, and Murder to the Call of Manor did not do it well. So we have sort of one example of it being done better and one of them being done poor. So I'm not quite sure how backdrop sets will work in the future, but it is something we're still keeping in mind. So anyway, guys, I hope you enjoyed this jaunt through history. But I'm now at work, so you all know what that means. It means the end of my end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to make magic. I'll talk to you all next time. Bye-bye.